Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
It was one of the dream conversations, but Naz was trying to hold on to that. He said to me at 11 years old, you know, I want 10 million if you earn 40 million. Brendan never got that. He never, ever got that. This is that dream talk.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
This is Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's sports breakfast show.
Is Tierno Barry going to be an Everton cult hero? Scored again last night.
He has that recovery arc from being completely shit for a long time.
I think you need to start with that. It kind of does help you. Joelinton would be another for Newcastle. A joke of a guy up front. People laughed at him. They were laughing with him then when he was playing midfield.
Who signed him as a striker, Joelinton? I don't actually
Steve
remember.
Steve Bruce.
Did he actually sign him as a striker? Was that
yeah, he played up front. I remember he scored the winner away to Spurs. And thought, okay, here's the start of it now. And he just said nothing. And then he was gradually moved back into midfield.
My favourite part was how people called him Linton for a while, like his name was
Joe Linton.
Joseph Linton.
Yeah. He's a big fella up front. But like, was the scouting just bad on him? I mean, not to put you on the spot here, but do you know what happened?
No, I think he was just one of those guys that, I guess it just doesn't translate to the Premier League. You know, he's like, you know, he's a good striker elsewhere and it just doesn't happen for him in the Premier League. And I don't know who saw it in him to bring him back. I think it was Eddie Howe put him deeper when he came in. You've seen like strikers going deeper. Like oftentimes, it doesn't really work. Well, Alan Smith is a good example, like of the old bleached head striker.
Yeah,
turn midfielder.
That was trying
Wayne Rooney even
trying to recover Smith's career after the leg break, though. Right, that was like
no. He broke his leg playing centre mid.
Did he?
Yeah. Well, he was on the wall specifically, but he's playing centre mid that day.
All right.
Yeah.
He'd already been past it then.
Yeah, he just wasn't working out. He signed like a year and a half before that, and he was all right in his first season, but they just moved him back. He wasn't scoring enough. He went to Newcastle and Smith. He was there for 5 years, didn't score a single goal.
Non-scoring strikers is a bit of an issue if that's your job, isn't it?
It's kind of a theme of the Premier League this season. The stats were illustrated by Sky on Sunday about that. Non-scoring strikers outside of the boy. And to be fair, Igor Thiago's having a great season so far. But a lot of high profile strikers not scoring an awful lot of goals. I don't know what's in the water, but it's something happening.
I think Ferguson was just trolling Leeds when he signed Smith, truth be told.
And he was a good player, like he was definitely Leeds' best player towards the end. I think it was seen as a grand signing, but he's so forgotten about when you think about historical signings. Like he's just a total afterthought, Alan Smith. But unlike Joelinton, he couldn't bring it back into midfield. I was looking at AFTV, by the way, their numbers. I was just interested by their numbers after the United game.
Higher than ever.
Yeah, massive. Do you know the amount of videos they get out on their YouTube?
But they're not just Arsenal anymore, isn't that the whole thing?
No.
Yeah, I think they're now like a network of fan
disgruntled
videos. Budget. Yeah. They've weaponized all fans, not just Arsenal fans.
Okay, well, this is all Arsenal stuff anyway. If you just go on their video section, their YouTube page on AFTV, an outrageous number of videos after the United game. But you're talking well into six figures for the K's. Now, in fairness, the Inter game, not that much. But the Nottingham Forest game before that, because it was a draw, because they lost points. Big views again.
Yeah.
It definitely correlates into them not doing well as grade for AFTV.
Sex sells,
which is
right?
Content for the show. I still can't believe how early the Arsenal fans left against United and the amount of them that left. There was a goal in it.
Never quite got the explanation. It's like, was there a tube strike or something
no, I think,
specific?
I think it was their own protest about how poor everything was.
Well, I'm a firm believer. You stick to the bitter end if you're actually a supporter. There is an element, if it's protest about Arteta being so conservative, I'd like to hear that, you know?
Yeah.
Like maybe they can goad the team into attack, attack, attack.
Possibly as well. It was just hard to get home.
In one of the world's great megalopolises that has a reasonable public transport system compared to many other places.
You can write it off, like you're not getting on whatever the closest tube is, whatever else, like it's that.
For a while, yeah.
Yeah, horrible wet night.
There was a bit of a crush actually after the Champions League final at Wembley that time. That was they have big games at Wembley all the time. And it's the Champions League final, you think they'll know how to manage the crowd here. Couldn't do it.
No.
Couldn't do it.
I remember coming out of that Spurs stadium And it's just like, what, I don't know, what the closest one that you could get on. But the queue is like going across the road. It's like this isn't the plan. This is dangerous. This is really dangerous. But it's just kind of, it gets to a point where they're like, you're on your own. Figure it out. Now, they did have like kind of stewards and stuff there, but my God, they were powerless.
A few, yeah.
They were powerless kids.
Yeah.
One fella absolutely lost a head with them.
Do you want me to do the newspaper headlines for you this morning? So yeah, it was a 1-1 draw last night between Everton and Leeds.
Leeds were 1-1. It was a very good goal by Everton, actually, Barry's equaliser. I didn't realise Carlinho's an Everton fan.
Carlinho.
Our boy in the Philippines.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't know that. Doctor Sports is a side channel for AFTV.
His avatar is an Everton crest.
Never saw it. I was always attracted by every show he starts with the flag of the Philippines. And that's, I suppose, subconsciously what I thought his avatar was. There you go. Everton.
Leeds could have done with the victory last night. Everton fresh off like hammering Villa 1-0. But like, you know, one of those 1-0s, like, okay, great.
I've yet to see an entire game at the Hill Dickinson. I've yet to feel it from start to finish. I'm only watching the highlights.
You should go. Get a game in there.
Mm.
Hunting season. Andy Farrell warns Ireland aiming for top spot. We're not here to finish best of the rest in that second tier or get sucked into the nether regions of the third tier, Wales/Italy.
Jesus.
Indecipherable.
So negative.
Ireland heading to the Six Nations with a lengthy injury list and lower expectations after a patchy 12 months, says Roy Keane in this piece, which has seen the national team slip down to fourth in the global rankings. Andy Farrell has insisted his squad will relish the tag of underdogs.
They have to, don't they? Well, I was interested in listening to Fiona Hayes on Monday Night Rugby with Gerry Thorney. She says it's not a crisis.
Which bit now?
The loose heads issue.
Well,
she sees a more opportunity. Gerry is the other side of it. And I suppose that would be the common feeling, that it is very much a crisis.
Well, the two lads from Munster and the two, there's the AIL and the 20-year-old from Leinster, is like, let's be seeing them, because you might end up in a World Cup with Michael Millen starting a big game and be like, okay, yeah, I'm sure that's grand, because he played in Paris that time. And was like, yeah, he's actually pretty good. Beast of a man.
I suppose it depends how it goes.
Yeah, exactly. so you learn a lot about them in this one. Slot must keep Reds in Europe's elite, Cara. So this is Jamie Carragher last night on Monday Night Football saying, forget about it. No Champions League qualification. Doesn't have a leg to stand on. We understand that this season has been a disappointment, essentially, I'm paraphrasing here, but we accept it.
Mm.
It's not right. It's not good enough. But we accept it momentarily. It's like, we know you live, and we're not calling around until next season. That's what the...
So how much leeway do you give?
First 6-8 weeks of next season, is it going well?
And so, but then you're not risk writing off the following season and not getting top four again.
It turns out changing manager midstream and you're going to beat all the best teams in the league.
Maybe.
Jonathan Wilson has a piece today, and the headline of it is, better the devil you know for stick, Spurs stick and Liverpool should stick. The only problem is, right, if you're managing the hierarchy of a football club, you're looking at what's going on at Man United and you're like, could I get a little bit of that? Just a little bit of that?
Yeah.
Everybody loves us now. They've all forgotten about the lunch cutbacks. And they're like,
it's funny what playing good football will do. It's just all other wrongs are righted.
There's a massive protest. Nobody shows up for it.
Well, they're still planned for the Fulham game.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Will it be as full-throated as it was? Maybe more full-throated, inspired now by, look what we can have all the time.
It's tough. It's tough for the tough for the protesters. Hard vibe to strike against after those two results. But their concerns are legitimate, so hopefully they get a good airing. But anyway, Slot, I don't know. He did what anyone wanted him to do last year. Beyond expectations. But so you're saying he has until mid-September?
Well, that's what I would do, but I'm not in charge. So what would you do? You burn him out now?
If you're going to burn him out.
Well,
burn him out before. Give the next guy as much time as possible.
The only thing is they're doing okay in the Champions League.
Yeah.
So there is a world in which they don't qualify.
So is Thomas Frank.
Yeah, but there is. You would say that it's more likely that Liverpool will win the Champions League than Spurs. Gone out on a limb there.
The vagaries of a draw, I would suggest. I would have said it was more likely Liverpool win the Champions League last year than PSG at this time.
Yeah, for sure.
There you go. Yeah, so who knows? But I don't know. It's a very strange dynamic we're in where it's like, he's not done anything mad. It's not like he's lost the head or he's kind of gone in a sort of Mourinho-esque
That's
thing
the opposite,
where he's
isn't
like,
it?
Yeah, you'd almost... There's kind of almost a grim acceptance to his fate. You're like, just do something. Say something to kind of give yourself a bit of oomph here.
There is a world in which they don't qualify for the Champions League through the league, but actually win the Champions League. Like, which is, I think, what happened when Rafa won it, right? They hadn't qualified that season.
Yeah. Spot on.
And I remember around this time of the year, Steven Gerrard saying in a press conference, well, we're not going to win the Champions League, so we need to qualify for it through the league. And Rafa had the head off him, like...
They could win the Champions League.
It would be mad if they did it from here, because they'd have to win the final 4-3 or 6-7.
It doesn't look entirely likely at the minute. You're going to eventually have to beat a good team over two legs, and they've been...
Yeah, no, incapable of doing that, it seems. So he has to win the Champions League if they don't, to keep his job. That's what Carragher is saying.
Yeah, that seems a very high bar.
Well, qualify for the Champions League through the league.
Yeah.
And that no one bats an eyelid. They're like, terrible season, aftermath of the thing, get going.
I think they'll be fine.
Quarter of a billion spent.
I think they will be fine.
Nothing to show for it. Behind Chelsea, behind Man United.
It would be... I'd be very confident there'll be enough to get top five, and presuming that's enough. I'd be less confident than
ahead of Villa, United or Chelsea.
No, Villa will be fine. Villa aren't going to get caught, I don't think, by that many teams.
Everything's possible. Go on.
So it'll be Man United, Chelsea thing. Remains to be seen with Man United and Chelsea. Yeah, Liverpool, I think, over the course of a 15-game spell, I still feel like Liverpool are the better team of those three, even in the circumstances that we're in.
Except the last 15-game spell, which...
Yeah, I know what you mean, but like, it is still, like, as bad as Liverpool have been, Man United are, is it a point, 2 points ahead of them in fourth? Like, they've kind of, I don't know, you kind of always have that faith and some sort of muscle memory kicking in, where it's like, these guys, like, chips are down. It's like, okay, we know what we have to do here.
Yeah.
Chips are
down, right?
What's that thing that, like, death focuses the mind? It's like, as they're kind of going in and it's kind of getting, like, more make or break, I'd still say they'll be fine. Right. I suspect. Billy. I'd be amazed if they didn't finish in the top five. It would be a calamitous fall.
You're the Billy Ocean when the going gets tough.
Yeah, I think so.
Liverpool need a bit of that. Man United, obviously, big news still. The content machine never sleeps. Bruno Bonus. United need to make €460,000 a week deal offer to keep Fernandes.
No, they don't.
So last summer, you were like, I think... Have they missed their Coutinho moment? When you had the Coutinho?
Yeah.
Is that you?
Well, 100 million or whatever.
So sell him for 100 million to Saudi and replace him with, you know, a midfielder who could play in Amorim's system and maybe whoever else. Now, Manchester United need to match the offer that has come from Saudi to keep Bruno because he's their best player because he's played really well in these two games. What do you do? You've just saved all that Casemiro money. Back the Brinks truck right up to, it's like, and the next house over in the gated community and give him the money.
Yeah.
No?
That's an absurd amount of money.
It seems a lot, doesn't it?
There's a reason that
Talon money.
The Saudi Arabian clubs will pay that money.
Because they're
the state.
They're taking it straight from the ground and
it's just that because that's what you have to pay for someone to give up their career and play there. But I think Man United would have a little bit more bargaining power. Now he's brilliant. He's really brilliant. You lose him, you'd be very hard pushed to replace him.
Let me come to that because that's in the back page. Let's do this one. Bank Bruno. Crunch time over key midfielder. United need to make a massive contract offer. They don't actually need to make a massive contract offer. They do have the trigger of another year in the deal. But by all accounts, there's a buyout in the clause. There's a buyout clause in the contract this summer for 50-odd million or 60-odd million for an overseas club. So anybody can match the club, match the buyout, put a massive contract on the table for them. What do you
Maybe
do?
They do.
Do you want to keep him? Or do you sell him and replace him with Cole Palmer? Cold Trafford, Palmer up for switch to Boyhood Club United. Picture of him in a Man United. I wonder, it's as good as they have a picture of the kids from the family or the agent who's like, well, we've got a picture of you in a jersey here. And maybe it's real, maybe it's not. Maybe it's AI, I don't know. I presume it's real.
I think so. They definitely, I think he was a Man United fan.
So Samuel Luckhurst has this, the ex Manchester Evening News now, the Manchester United correspondent for The Sun, that obviously he was ex-City when Jason Wilcox was there. Wilcox on the record is saying he can win the Ballon d'Or, ship out Bruno, replace him with a younger version, Cole Palmer, and everybody's happy. No? Net positive, net negative?
It's hard to know. Like, Bruno Fernandes has missed so few games for Manchester United since he's played in January 2020. Was it 6 years ago? Before COVID.
So two games is he missing that whole time?
He missed two of the last three of Ruben Amorim's games because he was injured. And there was a stat like he had missed like three games before that. So it's really hard to picture United without him. And he's main character energy. Like, when he plays, you notice him. So it's really difficult to picture United without him. He's one last big contract left in his career, I'd say. Is he? He's about 31, 32.
He's 31 in, to be 32 next September.
Yeah. I can't picture him somewhere else even at this stage. It's like he's almost a homegrown player, like that he's been there his whole career. And it's only been 6 years, but I suppose because of the content machine, he's so off. He's probably the most talked about name in 6 years at United, I would say. So it's very difficult to picture a world without him. He seems to be in great shape physically, and he does stuff that it's rare enough, like very few players around that do what he can do from midfield, where he's a grand player with the ball, he's a grand passer, like he's skillful enough, but I think his main threat is, even if he doesn't necessarily produce a goal or an assist every game, he'll try to create something.
Yeah.
And it's actually a very difficult skill. I think that like he annoys people because of his manner on the pitch. Like, it annoys people.
Yeah.
But if you took out that side of him, which you're not going to, but if you just look at him as a player, it's like he can have the odd bad game where he can be weak in possession and he's a poor tackler.
The thing is, if you
play him, he gives you the other way.
And if you play him in his right position,
yeah,
I mean, giving the ball away in the forward position, that's okay. And you accept it. You say whenever he has the ball, right, everybody, we're trying to score. But if he gives it away, you have to switch on straight away.
I know it's not as easy as that,
but like,
I can't remember like a 3 or 4 out of 10 he's ever gotten. You know? I think it's like he always does something for you. Because when, sure, Amram was playing, like you say, slightly out of position, like 15 yards further back than he probably should be.
Yeah.
And he was still fine in midfield. He's always at least fine. There's actually a lot to be said for that, for being at least fine.
The only thing is, right, giving a 31, turning 32-year-old at the start of next season a 20 million a year contract is precisely the type of thinking that got Manchester United into the situation they're in at the minute.
I don't know about that.
Overpaying players who are just
Would he be overpaid? Well, like he's their best player. We can kind of put that down. Like, he's their best player,
Colin's point, he's in great shape. The athlete in the best shape in the Premier League was Mo Salah, who everyone was like, is he going to be overpaid if you give him this new deal? And it just turns out we don't know when the moment is that they get tapped on the shoulder by time remains unbeaten.
If Liverpool can get stung for that, why would you not, you know, if they're that you regard them as best in class?
Well, but Man United always get stung by it.
They don't always get stung by it.
Varane, Casemiro, Schweinsteiger, all the way back.
But I don't know, like you're like...
So you think, give them the 20 million?
Firstly, they're different.
Change your tune.
No, but I'd say firstly, all those people were signed by not the current owners the current people running football. So you can't just say that. You can't just say, oh, the club have done this before. These aren't the same people. None of these guys did that. None of them were responsible for it.
Okay. David Gill's on the board still, isn't he?
He's not making decisions on transfers.
I'm sure they're like, hey, what do you think of this?
No.
Yeah, we did. We did that. Like,
no.
All right. Well,
and David Gill wasn't there for those either.
So you're like, you're saying they should give him the money.
I'm not, but you add up Colin's point. Like, he's basically not missed a game. Cole Palmer, by contrast, has missed many games, and he's like very injury prone. But I think I don't know if stats in that, but I know he's missed an awful lot of games for Chelsea by comparison. So like you're probably realistically, if you're getting rid of Bruno, and you're probably in these scenarios not actually selling him. Maybe you sell him for whatever. Not enough.
You're selling him in this. Yeah.
Not enough to buy Cole Palmer.
Are you probably getting the say close enough?
You wouldn't get 100 million. Now
I don't think it's going to cost 100 million for Cole Palmer at the moment, is it?
I mean, they'll whatever they charge, whatever it is. I
just say it's a like for like swap. Close
fair
enough.
Thing. You're still probably going to have to buy someone else as well, because you can't rely on Cole Palmer to be there more or less 40 plus games a season.
Do you not
starting.
Have a load of those players like Mount and? Do you not have those players?
Mount, I mean, famously injury prone as well.
Well, he's fit now.
Kinda, but like he's no real track record of stringing 20, 30 games a season back to back starting. The same way Bruno has. He didn't have that, like, at Man United, certainly. I would suspect you'd struggle to find that he's played maybe even three games 90 minutes back to back in the years he's been there. It just hasn't happened. So you are, like, it's what is it, like, the buy cheap, buy twice, or whatever that phrase is. It's like, none of these guys are going to be cheap. Buy expensive, but also buy twice. Like, if you get rid of Bruno Fernandes, you have no guarantee the next guy you bring in can match what his output in terms of being incredibly effective and incredibly durable. It's a very rare thing. He's a bit of a unicorn, like.
And you think it's worth signing the new deal for 2-3 seasons?
Well, we're getting that from whatever perspective. I know that's probably coming from somewhere. I don't know if it's just pure speculation. You know, it's whatever the origin of that is. I suspect, like, if Man United get to the Champions League, I suspect that'll flavour an awful lot of everyone's decision making thereafter.
They can afford
is
it.
Is he going to want to go? Is that the point he's going to go, nah, you know what, I'll put them over a barrel here, and if they get rid of me, that's fine. I'll go off to Saudi Arabia now. Just as things are kind of looking, turning up in a slightly positive sense, I'll play in the Champions League again. Nah, pass that in. I'm off to Al-Ittihad or wherever. It's like, it just doesn't strike me as the kind of decision he'd make. Maybe he goes elsewhere. Maybe he doesn't have to go to Saudi Arabia. But it would be a weird thing. It would be out of his character, I would suspect, to go just now as things are turning up, back in the Champions League, I'm going to go for money.
I think if you signed a new deal too, you mentioned Salah there, and the new deal and then the kind of form dips or whatever. We don't know yet, but I don't suspect that would happen with Fernandes, because the very thing that annoys people about him is that wild gesticulation and anxious energy that he has, which I think on the other side works as everlasting motivation. I've never seen a downed tool demotivated Bruno Fernandes.
As in, you can't be like that.
I've seen an irritating one, but I have never seen one that stops trying. So I don't think it's in his nature. I think if he signed a new deal, I think he would see it as
so these are negotiations, right?
That would be a backing of him, not like, this is great, no, I'm sorted for life.
Yeah. Okay. So,
because that's what he's annoyed about. I think to start with was when he considered leaving the club last summer. He said it on the pitch towards the end of last season. Was like, if the club don't want me, I'll go somewhere where I'm wanted. I think he likes to be wanted. I don't think giving him like obscene amount of money on paper there will necessarily demotivate him and say, "Well, I'm sorting out for life."
I don't think that's what happened with Salah either. I think Salah was already sorted for life.
What was your Salah point then?
It's just that you don't know when players are going to suddenly be past it. Like,
but they did. Like, they also lost Alexander Arnold over the summer, who was basically his foil for all the time he's been. Well, not all the time, but for a good portion of time, for his most progressive time there, he's been the foil behind him. He's now gone, and it's a serious regression what they have there comparatively. Like between Bradley, Frimpong, whatever else, be it Szoboszlai out there, like it's not the same dynamic. I think that it's not just a Salah problem, you know what I mean? Like, it's
I don't think Salah's form has been as good. And I think there is a world in which you just get old. Like, at some point, Bruno's going to get old, and you're going to end up with a deal where you're paying him 20, 25 million a year in cash. And it's like, oof, that was expensive, wasn't it?
Well, I guess that's just like even the best. So, as you're saying, like, I know, like, again, you read Liverpool highly with this. Like, they've done it twice in the summer, both Salah and Van Dijk. Both those deals, in hindsight, in terms of like getting them to play, maybe they sell them off and you kind of make some of that, recoup some of that money. But in terms of players, they've both dropped off a cliff in terms of like their performances this year. So if even the best can make those mistakes, I don't know why you think Man United would be absolved from it or would be excused from it.
Not to put words in your mouth, but your logic here is Liverpool are doing it, we should do it too.
No, my logic is if Liverpool can get suckered into that and believe that that's the right thing to do at that time and they took a chance and maybe that chance has failed, I'm saying the same rationale, you'd probably take a chance on someone who's delivered as much as Bruno Fernandes in the hope that that doesn't happen.
Okay, so Liverpool's shittiness in this situation is giving you comfort.
It's not that it's giving me comfort, it's just that it's like, well, they assessed their situation. Similar situation, obviously, whatever, higher performers and higher achievers.
I thought you'd all be enthusiastic about swapping out for a younger model. No?
He's routinely injured.
Well, I mean,
that's important. Like
he's had a bad run of it, but I do
go sign Morgan Rodgers.
I do wonder if a part of that is actually more to do with the fact that he doesn't want to be there anymore. And they're also not really picking him in his favourite spot. Whereas he goes to Man United, boyhood club, coming home, sticking it to City, who he has a grudge against.
You'd take him in, but I wouldn't be taking him in as the main man. But he'd definitely, like, geez, if you took him on the table, the same thing with Mount. Like, and I think he's unlucky. Mount, like, if Mount had come in and played as much as thing, he's a great player. He just doesn't play. Like, it's oh, Jesus. But if Palmer's on the table and you're like, and you get him for anything close to a kind of cut rate deal compared to what he would have been worth seemingly 12 months ago.
I think you get for around 50, 60 million because it's not like, it's also Chelsea are in a situation where they need to deal, right?
Why do you think they'd get him at that price? I mean, this guy has a trademark celebration, like he's a huge brand.
Well, he stole that celebration, as we know.
He trademarked it though, didn't he? It's a business.
He's done something today, actually. There's a logo.
Yeah, he did something with the... Yeah, the
can't trademark that celebration because it's not his. Like, it was Morgan Rodgers originally. We've seen it far more from Rodgers.
Cole Palmer just passed him out, did he?
Well, at the start, yeah.
We're seeing more of him.
I think it's what's the tortoise in the hair?
I don't know. I still think Cole Palmer's probably got a little bit more credit in the bank.
We'll see who's getting picked for England.
Yeah, well, he has scored in the Euros finals. I mean,
yeah, but you know, maybe. All right, if you just said you would much prefer Morgan Rodgers than Cole Palmer.
No. I'm talking about to replace Bruno Fernandes. I gather Morgan Rodgers is probably not as injury prone.
That's the only reason, yeah.
But like, I'm looking here, and it is quite. I know he's got a goal every other game for Chelsea. 82 games, 41 goals.
Oh yeah, you're turning your nose up at that.
I'm not. I just don't think you can put him in and say, yeah, you have everything, the durability required.
It's really hard to replace Bruno Fernandes.
It's next to near impossible.
He is very. I'm not even sure if he's unique.
Are you not prisoners of the now?
No.
What about the tactically anarchic Bruno Fernandes? Difficult to work in the team. All that briefing that was done against him over the years. The various situations where, like, you know, he's throwing the toys out of the pram relentlessly as the captain, and we're like, oh, he's not a leader. He's one of the problems of the club.
That's Roy Keane.
Puts in two great performances. Not just Roy Keane.
It's a lot of Roy Keane.
Two great performances, and you're like, wow, this guy, oh,
no,
pay him,
no.
Pay him half a million.
You say two great performances. No, we're talking about the mean over 6 years. I mean, look, the guy, the goals and the assists, like, the first to admit that he annoys you half the time, but he's always there. What's your famous line? What's the best availability?
Best availability.
Yeah.
And he is. You've heard of that now, have you?
Yeah. He's front of the queue there. Well, I mean, to use the argument against you more than anything. But he's very difficult, very, very difficult to replace. My preference would be to keep him as long as possible until the engine breaks down and then he can go and pay him whatever he wants till then. It's very difficult to get. If possible, I would also get Cole Palmer, yeah.
Get them both.
If you get rid of, say, Mason Mount wages, because he's on enormous money. So you would swap.
Well, you're getting rid of Rashford, Sancho.
Yeah, if Rashford goes, because we're reportedly Barcelona want him permanently. So if Rashford goes, Sancho goes.
Sancho's out of contract anyway, so he's gone, right?
And then Mason Mount goes, huge amount of wages gone out the building. And then Cole Palmer, you get in. Well, that's fabulous. Now, the thing is, Palmer probably won't be able to play in his position because Bruno Fernandes will still be at the club. And Fernandes will take that 10 spot. If Michael Carrick remains, I suppose it all depends on the managers. But oh my, Cole Palmer is an option. Incredible. As a replacement for Bruno Fernandes, unsure.
Like, I'm just looking. He's played a kind of total combined the way because he signed in January, didn't he?
Yeah, January 2020.
So he signed, he's kind of done six full seasons combined.
Yeah.
And at the minute, obviously he's going to play an awful lot more, but like, over full seasons, the least amount of games he's played is 46. As high up as 59. Mm. Never played Fernandes, never less than 46. Like, his Premier League appearances, 37, 36, 37, 35, 36. He misses so little. It's just, it's a very difficult thing to kind of, but it's a weird thing because there's no real model for his signing either. I remember when he signed, it was fairly out of the, like, I didn't know anything about him beforehand. I hadn't seen him much at Sporting. Like, you didn't.
He was at a couple of clubs too, you know. This is his longevity at United. So he was knocking about a bit. He played in Italy as well. I knew that he had a shot from distance on him. I had heard that and I had seen the odd highlight. So I was kind of excited. It was a fairly relatively progressive signing for United at the time. Yeah. It was unusually well scouted. But yeah, he is just so different. Dermot here wondering, has he missed something? Why would Cole Palmer leave Chelsea for United? So fandom is the big thing.
One of the factors. The main thing is he misses home. Mm. He's unsettled in London 2.5 years after his move from Manchester City. And there's a part of the town, Withenshaw, where he grew up. He's often seen back there with family and friends. Did they put a tracker on Luke Shaw's car one time? Is that what they did? Did you do that and found out that he was driving home?
Withenshaw.
Yeah.
For Luke
Shaw? No. Withenshaw's for Cole Palmer. That was them. But wasn't there an issue with one of Luke Shaw's early issues at Manchester United was that he was driving home the whole time and eating ice cream in the car on the way down?
That does sound familiar. I don't know if they tracked his car.
Well, how did they find out?
I don't know. Yikes.
We've a lament here in the comments about why we're not talking about the tennis. So once upon a time, we used to do...
don't see that there.
I'd be on to an appropriately named person on YouTube has said that. We used to do slots, remember, back in the day? Mm-hmm. And the truth is, so to let you know, we have the tennis on here for the first time in the studio, so we can see Coco Gauff warming up here in silence. The story of the 2026 Australian Open is... and. Part of the reason that we haven't covered this beyond talking about it the odd time ourselves and Simon Carr on the eve of the tournament is that all the seeds remain. All the top people on both draws, which is highly unusual that they remain into the quarterfinals. So the top seven from the men and women are there.
Right.
Yeah. So there's been notable names have been knocked out, like the defending champion, Madison Keys, got eliminated yesterday.
Right.
Daniel Medvedev, the three-time finalist at the Australian Open.
Venus Williams.
Final 2 years ago. He's gone. But
what was the story with Venus coming back to play?
You have all the best players actually sitting in the tournament in the quarterfinals. Sorry?
What was the story with Venus coming back to playing this?
Oh, she just loves the game. But like Joe Murphy.
Why is the crack with
can't get enough of it.
Why did they let her? What was
she's a multiple time champion in Australian Open. Yeah.
And of course not bad for her tickets either at those early rounds.
Maybe that's it. Did she do okay?
And she got eliminated in the first round.
Disgrace herself?
She never does. Never does. Bruno Fernandes, mean, average, fine. Never disgraces herself, ever. She's the curious legacy, Venus Williams. She was the sister. You know, 99, 2000, 2001, winning all around her, and then Serena came in and took over. She has to deal with that now. She recently got married, Venus, for the first time. But, she just loves the game.
Yeah, in fairness, the ticket sales point is a good one.
Oh, I'd say they're going to lose their luck. You want to come over?
45 degrees.
She lost 6-4 in the final set of the first round.
So she got three sets?
Yeah.
All right.
She's very fit, like.
Get her to Wimbledon, you know?
Yeah, she can play. She's won everything. She won all the slams, so they'll have her back if they want it. So this match just started the quarterfinals. So look, it'll get interesting from here if you are a fan of tennis, if you're a casual fan. The reason it's worth it for the first week and a half is all the best players are sitting in the tournament. It's very, very unusual that will happen in Grand Slams.
So how's it shaping up then? Who's likely to win?
I'd say Aryna Sabalenka.
Same, so nothing.
Jannik Sinner, Carlos Alcaraz has never won the Australian Open. He's won everything else, never won the Australian, never even come close to winning the Australian Open.
How many times has he played it?
Several.
Is he only like 21 or 2?
No, he's much older than that, but he's...
Carlos Alcaraz.
He has an incredible... he's 22. Sorry, you're absolutely correct. But he has incredible longevity already. So he's, you know, he's won the French Open twice, Wimbledon twice, the US Open twice. At 19, he won a Masters event. So he's been on the tour properly for about 4 years.
Okay.
So he's had 4 to 5 attempts at the Australian Open. Now, we actually did pull out in 2023.
All right, okay. So
2024, Alexander Zverev beat him easily. And last year, Andy Murray's Novak Djokovic beat him, which was Murray's highlight of his short time as Djokovic's coach.
So what would make it difficult for him here? What's the problem?
I don't know.
There's very small sample size.
There's no answer. There's no real answer as to why he hasn't won the Australian Open. It's crazy because he's won on the same surface as the US Open.
Yeah.
But the heat wouldn't be a factor, you'd imagine, for him. Same for everyone. And also, it's a long time since Alcaraz has played outside of those main courts where there is a roof. There is the protection from the sun.
They don't care as much about the Australian Open as you know.
Well, I mean, say that to Novak Djokovic. You know, that's where he's won most of his slams. And
is that still a thing? Because I remember looking before at like I love looking at the breakdowns of the careers, where like the big winners where they won and stuff. Mm. And am I right? Like Bjorn Borg played there. Like, I know it's a different time. It's a lot. Would have been a different flight. But like he only seemed to play there a handful of times at most.
Yeah, it was. Well, I guess it was just a massive hassle back then. But yeah, it definitely wasn't seen as that important. It's very much the fourth slam. I'd say that's widely acknowledged, but it is part of the four slams. So
the money is outrageous. Yeah. Like, even when you're a multi-millionaire, you like the money.
It's really good. Do you remember they did the one-point slam?
A lot of marketing.
2 weeks ago when the coach won it, won $1 million.
Yeah.
They're good. Like they don't take themselves that seriously, and it's good. But the tournament is taken seriously. But if you just win the Australian Open and that's all you win for your career, like you won't necessarily be remembered for it. Like Thomas Johansson, the Swede, won it in 2002.
Do you get into the Hall of Fame?
That, you know, if you win Wimbledon once, it's cool. You know, Marion Bartoli, the Italian.
Richard Krajicek.
She won Wimbledon and she retired young, but she'll have that.
Is that just our Northern Hemisphere bias?
Maria
it is, of course, yeah. Alcaraz, most wins after 100 major matches in the Open era. Him and Bjorn Borg have the record. After 100 matches, they're 87 and 13. That's their record.
Jesus Christ.
Your first 100 major matches in the Open era. McEnroe and Rafa Nadal are second, 86 and 14. Jimmy Connors, Ken Rosewald, John Newcomb, Arthur Ashe and Jim Courier. You've got to go down for Djokovic. 79-21 Djokovic. But obviously Djokovic has now become, so there's 100 matches at, is it 100 matches? I'm going to get this stat wrong, but three players have won 100 matches at a single slam. Federer at Wimbledon, Nadal at Paris, and Djokovic has now done it in Melbourne, Wimbledon and Flushing Meadow.
Yeah.
It's like,
he has 400 singles win there during this tournament as well in Grand Slams.
Well, then that must be it. Yeah. So that is, it's like, that's pretty good.
Yeah. And even
I can go, that's pretty good.
He's in this phase of his career where he has to be comfortable with the fact, if he can, that he's the third best player.
They're still raging against the dying of the light, which is also something, I guess, heroic in that too, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. I don't know if he'll get a little bit of a bump of love. It's kind of all he wants, really, is to be appreciated, Djokovic. He so desperately wants to be as adored as Nadal and Federer. You know, he was on for the Calendar Slam in 2021. So he won the Australian, won the French, famously beat Nadal en route, won Wimbledon, got to the US Open final, lost in straight sets to Medvedev, but burst into tears because the fans in New York finally took to him after years of disregarding him. And that's all he really wanted. He was a happy man. Now what he really wants is that 25th slam and to be loved.
Yeah, and like, look, it's Margaret Court he's beaten, isn't it?
Yeah. They're level together.
Like anybody who would cry and see her knocked off the... I mean, I'm sure now there's like a massive support group for Margaret Court.
Oh, yeah,
all over the dark.
Never been more popular.
Of X have found each other. You like Margaret Court? Me too. Oh, wow, yeah. We have a meeting, yeah. Come on, online. And all the AI bots too. And the various sex dolls. Where are you going next, Colm?
Where am I going? It's me, is it? All right. Tommy Martin, did you see this quote?
I did, yeah.
So he's going to be on the evening show. Is it tonight? He's on anyway. So this was about summer football and kids not playing enough football. So this was actually in relation to a Saturday panel. Chat between Owen Doyle and Johnny Ward, David Connolly, John Duggan. So Tommy Martin, this is quite lengthy here. I tried to make this brief as possible. Well done, lads, for keeping this topic on the agenda after debates, but soccer calendars seem to have gone quiet following the ill-fated FAI Pathways ban, which is true. We don't hear about it that much anymore. Someone coached underage soccer in Dublin. Sorry, this is Tommy Martin, the broadcaster, of course, from Donegal, living in Dublin.
Good Marino AFC, man.
Oh, yeah, down the road from you, yeah. Do you coach?
No.
Why not? No interest in the kids? Someone coaching underage soccer in Dublin, we are offering kids at the moment. Is that good enough, what we're offering? Aside from the elite few, the majority of grassroots clubs are dependent on grass pitches, usually public parks. So when bad weather like this, loads of games get called off. So from November to March, a lot of football is on the wayside. Long story short, we're relying at the moment, looking out the window and hoping for the best of the weather. Not enough astro facilities, not enough indoor options this time of year. Kids losing out to playing football. It's a huge problem. So we've talked about this at length over the last couple of years, but it has gone quiet over the last few months. Tommy's brought it back to the table after the lads brought it up into the Saturday panel. This is not meant to go as far as the FAI or, in this case, the DDSL.
Say that again?
This is not meant to go as far as the FAI. This shouldn't be an FAI problem. Why does this happen? This should be sorted out, right? Or, in this case, the DDSL.
This is not meant as a go at.
Sorry, not meant as a go at. Sorry, yeah, the FAI. Or, in this case, the DDSL. More to ask why we can't do better. So more government spending on municipal or multi-sport all-weather pitches, naturally. Indoor futsal or small-sided Astro tournaments for the worst of the winter months. Make the most of the better months by running juvenile seasons up until the end of June and starting end of August as per school calendar. And then if you're worried about the numbers during the summer holiday season, organise small-sided tournaments.
Yeah, all of it makes perfect sense, I think. We've had this conversation with Vinny a good bit over the years. I wonder, now that we're in the situation we're in and the weather is increasingly the way it is, and the like, is there are summer sports, are they becoming good weather sports? Because we don't have enough facilities, municipal facilities.
Most of all, ask what's in the kids' interest rather than managers and clubs who want to win trophies or political battles between administrative vested interests. Kids just want to play games. Not enough games. I mean, look, my memory of like that, nothing's changed much in terms of like 20 years because the weather hasn't changed either. Between November and March, the amount of games that you'd have called off is unbelievable. You'd go into unwanted hibernation with football. And look, they're like speaking with people anecdotally about situations of theirs where they have kids and they play loads of sports, it's like they don't want summer calendar. A lot of parents don't want it. It's hassle. It's a massive hassle. You have plans, you're away. Different psyche during the summer. It's very difficult to get people to come together with this.
Well, you have plans, you're away, right? You might miss the big games or there might be, but like, is that the whole point of youth sport is winning a cup? Do you know what I mean? It's like, play when you can play, don't play when you're not there. Over the course of the year, acquire skills and get better and you'll find your level. As opposed to, oh, we were away for two league games and a cup game. It's like, okay, fine, but you were away from them. It's okay.
Yeah.
The world continues on its merry way and it's not a tragedy from a sporting perspective. I think, we want to win.
That's what, Vinny said, it was like, well, a lot of Dubs do go to Wexford for the summer. So just, there's no one around, they all go to mobile homes. It's like, I hear plenty of Dublin accents around the place in the summer. And if you do go for the summer, that's a small portion. If you go on summer holidays, that's 2 weeks, that's two games.
And he's on his treadmill at the moment shouting at some random beside him going, ah, lads, out of here, misrepresenting me. So come on, let's be having you. Come on back in.
I know Tommy will be on the show. He'll be on to talk about it. And look, it's a situation that people are like, oh, we've had this discussion because it's not been resolved and I don't know if it will be because there's too many different interests and the kids will do what they're told. If kids could vote in this and there was a vote,
yeah,
it could change.
I suppose there's loads of different aspects to it, though, and it's important maybe that we don't be too fatalistic about it. Like, demanding of your local politicians, the council, that there is better cooperation and more municipal facilities isn't actually that outrageous. The front page news today says we're one of the highest spending countries in the world when it comes to public service. Can we also ask for some facilities? Like, we can make that a prerequisite of government policy. You get... If the opposition were to suddenly say, we're going to invest more in this, the government will steal the idea in time for the next election and it'll happen. That's how our democracy works. It's a good idea, it gets stolen by the people in power. And that's fine. That's how it should be. But like, someone needs to come up with a costed idea and say, like there's loads of if there's loads of facilities that could be repurposed in every part of the country so that there is a futsal possibility this week for 100,000, 200,000, 500,000 kids across the country. If we were of a mind, we'd be like, oh, that hall there, you're not using that. If we give you some money for that and put proper facilities in, changing rooms and showers and better access and parking, is that fixable? It probably is.
Yeah.
Look, where there's a will, there's a way.
Totally, yeah. But the collective will is just not there. Like, look, Chris Fox there on YouTube probably speaks on behalf of a lot of people, right? Additional tournaments during the summer, well and good, but parents need a break because you have swimming, athletics, football, hurling, soccer. 2 to 3 kids of different ages, then the parents are wrecked.
Yeah,
that's every anecdotal feedback I'm getting. Parents are like, no, I'm not doing that. No chance.
Then don't do it. You're not actually missing out. You're going to have the same, like, you'll have the same amount of stuff. Like, yeah, I think every parent understands this who has kids who are, like, making runs and stuff, that you can't do everything all the time. But on balance, over a long period of time, for the benefit of football, football needs kids playing more games more often. And when you start at that starting point and you work backwards, you go, well, summer football is actually a necessity. And if some kids drop out because of that, that's fine. More kids won't. Like, more kids will actually play more football.
Mm-hmm.